relativistic effective theory. What I'll be talking about are applications of, if you want, the exact opposite effective field theory, namely an effective field theory for highly relativistic particles. And this effective field theory is called soft collinear effective theory. This has been around for quite a while now. Similar to any effective theory, what you do is you have some high energy scale, some high energy process. You integrate out the high energy part into Wilson coefficients. In our case, this high energy part is called the hard part, and it has to do with the hard scattering reaction. And then in this effective field theory, you have low energy fields. What is special about this soft collinear effective field theory is that there are two types of fields, so-called collinear fields, which in this example describe the physics of these partons here splitting inside this jet, and soft fields, which describe the soft radiation from these two jets here. And the basic goal here is to factorize cross-sections in the limits where particles are very energetic, and to resum large Sudakov logs which arise in such processes. Now, I've said high energy and relativistic, so it sounds like I'm on the wrong frontier. After all, we're supposed to be at the precision frontier here. But of course, what counts is not what the value of the energy is, but what counts is the ratio of two energy scales. And in this case, what is relevant is masses divided over energies. So whenever you have small masses and large energies, then you have highly relativistic particles, and then this framework is applicable. In fact, this effective theory was initially developed for B meson decays into light mesons, where the scale ratio then would be something like, let's say, in this case, the pion mass over the B meson mass. And the goal is then to do an expansion in this ratio and to simplify and factorize the cross-section. In the meantime, there have been many applications to jet physics at the LHC. In this case, the relevant scale ratio is, let's say, the mass over the jet over its energy, or the transverse momentum of a jet divided by its energy. In the present context, what can be scale ratios are, for example, ratios like the electron mass divided by the momentum transfer. And even if you're at a low energy reaction, this scale ratio can actually be much larger than, let's say, the jet mass over the jet energy. So as I'll show you, there are applications like, for example, in electron-proton scattering, which we just discussed, where you can make use of this scale ratio and where you can do these expansions. The goal of the expansions is twofold. When you do this expansion, the problem simplifies, so computations become simpler. That's one goal. The other is that when you have these scale ratios and you do perturbation theory, you end up with large logs, and you want to resum these large logs. Good. Now I should, however, come to a disclaimer. I said that the effective field theory was really developed in the context of flavor physics, and there has been a lot of work in the beginning almost exclusively on B decays. However, then once the LHC started switching on, the field has kind of moved more towards LHC physics. So in the past 10 years, I've actually not done low energy precision physics, but LHC physics, and so has most of the field. So in the beginning, when we had the annual SCET conference, there were exclusively talks on B decays. By now, it's 30 talks on LHC physics and one or two talks on low energy precision physics. Of course, the person you should have invited to give the talk on low energy precision physics was exactly the person who gave the talk at last year's or this year's conference. But unfortunately or fortunately, this was Richard Hill, so since he couldn't invite himself to give the talk, you're getting sort of not the first choice as a speaker, namely you get me, but I'll discuss his nice work in quite some detail. On the other hand, it still may be useful to discuss things here, even things that are happening not directly at the intensity frontier, but at the LHC. And the reason is simply that the LHC is becoming part of the intensity frontier. So precision physics is now something that people do at the LHC. Since we didn't find a plethora of new particles, what you now want to do is precision physics also there. And the types of things which arise in this context are things which are relevant also at low energies in particular, rather than simply doing QCD corrections, which is what the people were doing at the LHC at the beginning. More and more work is now also done on electroweak corrections and on resummations for electroweak effects. In many of the original applications of this effective theory, people set all the masses to zero at the LHC. So you say the top quark is heavy and all the other masses you can forget about. That's no longer true. For example, if you want precise predictions for the for Higgs production, then you want to keep the B quark mass non-zero, and you maybe want to resum logs that are associated with this type of small scale. Another thing that was important in B decays is that people, when they did this expansion in the scale ratio, it's actually not really m pi over mb, it's more like lambda qcd over mb. And so the power corrections are relatively large, and people worried a lot about these power corrections. Then everybody was relieved to go to the LHC and forget about them. But now that we have more precision at the LHC, there has been a lot of work again on power corrections and whether you can factorize cross sections also at the power correction level. Good. So I'll start first with a little overview with sort of the classic situation where Sudakov logs arise, namely the Sudakov form factor. I'll then discuss a little bit the soft and collinear factorization, which is sort of the underlying physics of the effective theory. And then I'll discuss several recent areas of progress. And I'll discuss them in sort of decreasing importance for low energy physics. So I'll start discussing electron-proton scattering in an expansion in the electron mass. So that's Richard's recent work, which is a nice application of this soft collinear effective theory, which is directly relevant to the last talk, namely to the extraction of the proton radius. I'll then discuss power corrections, which were, I think, also mentioned this morning. So when Alexei discussed the mu to e conversion, he had an expansion in a scale delta. And then people immediately were asking, well, how about if you go to subleading powers in delta, and will there be logs as well? So this is power corrections. And then I'll discuss something which people have finally managed to include in the effective field theory, which is Glauber gluons. I'm not sure at all how this is useful at the intensity frontier, but if you tell me that it's useful, it will be great. And then if you have time, I'll discuss what I'm actually working on at the moment, which is non-global logs, where I'm pretty sure that it's of no relevance to the intensity frontier, but it's actually quite nice physics. So if you allow me, I will discuss this a little bit. Good, so let's get started at the beginning with the Sudakov form factor, which is the classic example where you get these large logarithms in a process with energetic particles. So the simplest process is to just take the form factor of an electron in a region where the momentum transfer is much, much, much larger than the electron mass. Then you can expand in the electron mass over the momentum transfer. And then at leading power in the expansion, you find the following simple result, namely that the Dirac form factor is given just by a simple exponential of this double log seen here. There's an extra function here. Obviously, this form factor is not directly a physical quantity, so you either have to include some soft photon radiation as well, or you could give the photon a mass. So that's this extra function here. And so we see these logarithms, and these logarithms will degrade the perturbative expansion. And these logarithms can easily be large in realistic applications. So now I'm starting to steal things from Richard. So here is an example, the electron-proton scattering just discussed in the last talk. Of course, the Sudakov form factor exactly appears in such a computation. This now includes some amount of real radiation as well. The F here is now not the form factor of the electron, but it's a proton form factor. But if you include these corrections here, then your result will be corrected by exactly this type of a Sudakov log. And this Sudakov log can be large. So if this momentum transfer is of the order of a GeV, which is where these MINES and other experiments measure, then this can be of order 1, this correction. So it's definitely you want to resum these corrections. And as we have seen, in this case, it's simple. You can just exponentiate it. But one should stress that this simple exponentiation, this is true for the leading log correction, but of course not for the entire QED correction. And if you look at the scaling here, if this entire term is order 1, that means that you should count these large logs here as order square root, 1 over square root of alpha, roughly. And so the unresumed contribution, the subleading logs which you get, will then be of order square root of alpha. So they're actually larger than your typical QED corrections, and it's something which you want to include if you want to do a precision extraction of the proton radius. Good. Now, I've already mentioned so that the large logs arise when particles become soft or collinear. And in both these limits, gauge theories simplify. So the soft interactions, they factor off. These are iconal, and you can factor them off the rest of the process. The collinear, the amplitudes with collinear particles factorize basically because of interference of different sectors is power suppressed. So at the leading order, you only need to consider one sector here. I'll show this more concrete in a minute. So here's the soft factorization, which you presumably all know very well. If you have an amplitude with some energetic partons and you emit a soft photon or a soft gluon, what you find is that you can get this result with the additional soft photon as the amplitude without the photon times this iconal factor here. And then in a massless theory, this iconal factor here has a denominator, which will have this structure here, which will lead to a collinear singularity and a soft singularity when you integrate over phase space. If you have masses, then instead what you get are these Sudakov logs, which we saw in the beginning. In QED, if you have several of these emissions, then you get several of these iconal factors. So these things here become like propagators. So these iconal propagators, you get two diagrams. If you add them up, then you simply get the product of the individual emissions. And using relations like this, you can actually show that the entire soft photon contribution exponentiates. And so that's this famous result, classic result by Yeni, Frauci, and Sura. And this was the basis for this exponentiation we did in the beginning. What's important is that is true for soft photons. And so you captured the logs which come from the soft photons. And indeed, the leading logs have to do with soft photons. But if you want to resum subleading logs, that will not be good enough on its own. Let me briefly mention what happens in QCD. In QCD, you would have the same iconal identities, but you would have color matrices sitting at these vertices. And so the two terms here have different color matrices. And when you combine them, you're not simply getting this, but you get this result plus a commutator term. And so that's a bit more complicated. So it's not a simple exponentiation. This is called a non-abelian exponentiation, where you get these additional commutator terms when you compute soft functions. You can still get this exponentiation sort of on the operator level. One can write all these soft emissions in an object, which is called a Wilson line. So it is an exponential, but it's a matrix valued. So it's a bit more complicated. I'll come back to this when we go to the non-global logs towards the end. Here is the collinear factorization, which I mentioned earlier. So I said that this interference goes away. So if these two partons here become collinear in this n parton amplitude, you can write it as an n minus 1 parton amplitude times something called the splitting function. And that's a big simplification if you have a complicated amplitude with n partons. And as I said, it means that this thing will no longer interfere with all the other ones, but only with itself. There was an interesting development about 2 years ago where people computed the infrared singularities of this at 3 loops, and initially it looked like they violated this collinear factorization. Then it turned out that there was an extra structure which was missed originally, and it actually, once this was included, this collinear factorization is restored. So it's actually tested now to the 3 loop level that this indeed works. Good. Now, this type of factorization of soft and collinear factorization is implemented in this effective field theory on the level of fields. So the same structure which I discussed in words here is implemented on the operator level. So when you look at the cross section, you will have a factorization like this, where you have the soft matrix element where these Eichnell factors go. These are described in terms of separate soft fields. You'll have these collinear branchings, which are described by their own fields. And then you'll have the underlying hard process, which becomes a Wilson coefficient in the effective theory. And then what one does is one uses renormalization group equations to do the resummation. I briefly want to show this for the Sudakov form factor. Now, easier than the massive Sudakov form factor, to which I will come back, is the massless one. If you do the massless one, you would have this function of massless but off-shell one. You would have this function of three variables, the momentum transfer and the off-shellness of the two lines. If you analyze it in the limit of large momentum transfer, it will factorize into functions of just single variables of the momentum transfer, this hard function, collinear functions, which depend only on the off-shellness, and then a soft function, which depends on this special combination. So that's very important, since they are now all functions of a single variable. You've separated the physics at the different scales, and then one can use RG evolution, where one evolves these together in order to resum the logs. So that's shown here. Each of these functions depends on the renormalization scale. I can solve the evolution equation and then evolve each of them or all of them to a common reference scale, multiply them together. And since I've evaluated all the components at their natural scales, I avoid large logs, or if you want, I resum them by solving these evolution equations here. And so this type of setup has been used for many applications, where people did resummations for all kinds of things. What I will now focus in the following are examples where we're still sort of missing this factorization theorem. And maybe somewhat embarrassingly, I think mass processes with small masses, actually, so where I, instead of an off-shellness, have a small mass, are in the category, I think, where this factorization is not 100% understood, neither within SCET nor within other methods of factorization. So that's one area where I will talk a little bit about this. I've already mentioned this is relevant at the LHC when you want to understand B quark effects in Higgs production, for example. I mentioned I will also talk about power corrections. Here, in principle, we have, I think, the basic formalism to do it, but you'll see that it's quite non-trivial to actually do this in practice. And then the two maybe less useful things are the Glauber discussion. So I want to discuss the forward scattering. Here I get logs of the large center of mass energy divided by the small t. And this is kind of a different types of logs, and this is not part of the usual soft and collinear effective theory. And then finally, I'll discuss these non-global observables. Now, the important things, there has been a lot of work in all these areas. So there are many people within SCET and outside it have thought about these effects of small masses. There has been a burst of activity after many years, again, on these power corrections, where you see that there has been many papers this and the last year. And as I said, we can now address also forward scattering and these non-global pieces here. And it's perfect that Richard now has made it here, because I will talk about his work, and so it's good if he stops me if I say nonsense. Good, so I want to, the first topic is this expansion in small masses, and the example I want to discuss again is the Sudakov form factor that we discussed at the beginning. Now in this, if you want, effective field theory framework, so we said there will be a hard contribution. Richard has computed this in his paper. I have to explain you the symbol here. So this R means Richard, just to, and it means that I stole from your talk at the SCET conference. It also means that, yes, exactly. So this is this hard function. This is actually the same as in the off-shell massless case. So this doesn't know about the masses, just about the momentum transfer. Here are the collinear functions, which Richard has computed, and here the soft one. And then you get the form factor, the total form factor, by multiplying these together. What's interesting and what is more complicated compared to the off-shell case, which I showed you before, is that this soft function here still depends on q squared over m squared. So this still knows about the other scales. So this is a bit different than the case before. In the case before, each function only knew about one scale. And if you evaluated it with mu in the region of, let's say, lambda in this case, you wouldn't have any large logs. Here, that's not true. There is a large log. So in some sense, this factorization is not yet complete. This is something which we have seen in a number of other things. So people now call this a rapidity log. I mean, it is a log which comes from the fact that the soft radiation can go over a large rapidity range. Or we call this the collinear anomaly. For example, when you do PT resummation, you will find very similar structures. It's not a problem, because as we have discussed, these soft functions simply exponentiate. This is part of the soft function, so we know how to resum this. We don't need any Archie evolution. You simply exponentiate it. But it shows you that this factorization with small masses is more complicated than the other case. Now, Richard has looked at this in more detail in his paper. So he took the entire Sudakov form factor. He has evaluated all the different pieces at two loops. And the type of factorization formula you find is you get a hard function, a soft function, and then a collinear function, this jet function here. But there is, again, there's a remainder function which contains these additional collinear logs. Richard then again shows that these exponentiate, because again, this remainder comes from a ratio of soft functions, and the soft functions exponentiate. We have used a similar factorization theorem as the one here to get massive Baba scattering from massless one. So if you want to get the result for massive Baba scattering, actually, if you want next to leading order, this is not something that people have directly been able to compute, because these massive loop integrals are very complicated. So if you have a factorization formula like this, what you can do is you can start with this hard function, which is the massless function, which is easy to compute. Well, not easy, but which people could compute already in 2000 or so. Then you multiply it with these other functions here, and you get the result in the limit where the mass goes to zero. And so this was first done by Sasha Penin in 05, and we then confirmed this result using these methods. Now, Richard's interest with this was not the Sudakov form factor, but actually to do electron proton scattering used to extract the proton radius. This has a bit more elements. Certainly, this Sudakov form factor arises. But of course, you can also have radiation from the proton. For this, you can use non-relativistic effective theory if you want, or heavy proton effective theory. So this is something we know how to deal with it. And then it's interesting, obviously, to include the nuclear corrections, in particular the ones which Gill also discussed from two-photon exchange. Now, the important message here is that all this type of hadronic stuff will go into this hard function. So it's, of course, you can't compute these hadronic corrections directly. But since they're part of the hard function here, they're completely separated from these collinear and soft emissions. And so that gives you a very clean and field theoretic way of defining what you mean by this and how the two-photon exchange is different from iterating to one-photon exchanges, etc. So you cleanly can define what you mean by this part. Here is a slide where Richard looks at the result of this. So the black line is the result where you include all of this, and you resum these logs, not only the leading logs, but also the subleading logs. And this is compared to an exponentiation of just the one loop, which is the way that these are traditionally included. This resummation is traditionally done. And then with two different schemes for the two-photon piece. And if you look at the differences here, they're at the level of 0.5% to 1%. And this is large, or this is of the order that the systematic errors, of the order of the systematic errors that are quoted by the experiment. I think a full analysis here is not yet finished, if I understood Richard, at the SCET conference. So it's not yet clear how much of an effect this will have on the extraction of the proton radius. But at least from the order of size, from the size of these things, they are of such a size that they are relevant. Also, looking at this, well, maybe now Richard should continue to talking. So, if you do, for example, this exponentiation of the one loop, there are different ways with which you can do this. So there is some scheme uncertainty there. Also, when you look at the two photon piece, there are different scheme choices, and this is somehow resolved in this formalism. Good, so I've kind of said this. So we have this factorization theorem, and for QED, Richard has been able to resum these logs using properties such that the soft function is simply exponentiating. I think in general, looking at processes with small masses, we still don't have the full understanding, and we still not in all cases know how to really properly formulate these things in the effective field theory. So I think, well, so if you want to do this on the level of the effective field theory, you would need a regulator which regularizes everything, even if you expand all the diagrams. And to do this in a gauge invariant way, we don't know exactly. There are also questions about momentum modes in such diagrams. This was a bit part of Andre's talk, that when we do these massive computations, it's less easy to know exactly what momentum regions you need for what. So things are certainly more complicated. So I think it's fair to say that we're not yet at the end here in this type of studies of our understanding. On a maybe more practical level, maybe proof that we don't fully understand these things yet is that we still don't know how to systematically resum all the logs you get of the B quark mass over the Higgs mass when you do total Higgs production. So there has been progress on this in several papers, and there are elements which are understood, for example, I think the abelian piece, but the full understanding of this is still missing, and I think the problem is these types of issues that I've mentioned here. Good. Now I want to do power corrections. The power corrections also have appeared. So when Gill in his talk wanted to do this NRQED computation, he showed you how to include power corrections, and he went to what looked like an absurdly high order, 1 over ME to the fourth or so. So this Lagrangian grew longer and longer, but in principle one knows how to do this. The same is true in the soft collinear effective theory. Once you have the field theory, all you have to do is you have to take all your basic fields, so in this case, collinear fields, soft fields, and then you simply have to write all the operators you can write at a given power in the expansion parameter. And here you see the power in this expansion parameter, lambda, of each building block, and then you just combine these together. So it sounds straightforward, and maybe it even is, but it's in practice quite involved to actually do this in a concrete example and to do concrete physics with this. So in these B physics applications, these power corrections are important. For example, in the anomalies discussed in the morning, the biggest anomaly currently is B to S mu plus mu minus, so B to K star mu plus mu minus. This relies on such factorization theorems, but power corrections are important. And whether it's 5 sigma or only 3 sigma will crucially depend how good you understand these power corrections. So in the B physics case, people very early on wrote the operators, but it actually took quite a while to really work out an entire process and analyze this in detail. And maybe the only one where this has been achieved is inclusive B decays. So Gil Pass and his collaborators have worked on this. There are many more papers, only quoting my favorite ones here. Another very nice one is that people have analyzed some power-suppressed B decays and have written down factorization formulas for these. So there are some applications, but not a lot of them. And what is also interesting, that so far no resummations have been done for such power-suppressed observables, with one example, which I will mention in a little bit.
You have to also consider that the question is it phenomenologically important to do resummation for power-suppressed observables?
Yes.
That's one of the things that...
Yes, to be fair, so in B physics application, often the resummation aspect wasn't that important, because since the scale ratio is not that huge, also the logs are not that huge, so you can get away with maybe not resumming.
And hadronic uncertainty is more of an issue.
Exactly, but hadronic uncertainties can be related to this power, exactly to these types of power corrections that are around. Still, but if you will actually want to do this, it's quite involved, because you have to solve these Archie evolution equations, and it's now many operators. It's a big matrix, and the operators depend on different positions, so it's like PDF evolution, but with actually not just a single momentum fraction, but with several momentum fractions. So this is complicated if one really wants to do this in general. But there is interest from this, because we reached a precision where we, for example, want power corrections to PT spectra at the LHC. And also string theorists got excited about power corrections to soft photon theorems. So Strominger and friends have a number of papers. So that has prompted some of this work. One progress here is that people came up with a good method to organize the operators. Since the underlying hard Wilson coefficients are really scattering amplitudes, you can actually organize the operators in the same way as you organize scattering amplitudes. So you can organize them by helicity. You can use the same tricks for color structure that you use when you look at amplitudes. And so that's what these people have been doing. And now very, very recently, there have been papers which give the operators for two-jet production in E plus C minus, or for glue-blue to Higgs. This is, would be, for example, relevant for the PT spectra. Just to shock you, I show you a table. So this is where you see the difference between in principle and in practice. So there are many operators. So if you actually do an analysis, this is quite non-trivial.
May I say something on these things? So if you were trying to guess that just by looking at the amplitudes, then it would be pretty much impossible. But just looking at the diagram,
not be a good idea. But looking at the amplitudes, you would get exactly this set, because these are exactly sort of the helicity configurations which you can have with this particular particle content. So this is quite close to the amplitudes. And it's the bookkeeping that people use for amplitudes is more or less the bookkeeping here. Let me show you one example of this. And for this, I have to introduce something slightly different, namely something called n-jettiness subtraction, which is a nice application of this effective field theory framework, and is something which actually could be useful also at the precision frontier, because it's useful basically for any next-to-next-to leading order computation. So the idea here is that you want to compute some cross-section to next-to-next-to leading order. And then you artificially split your cross-section into two parts. You introduce, at this point artificially, some hadronic event shape, which is called n-jettiness. And this hadronic event shape is such that if it is larger than zero, it means you have an additional emission, so you have an additional jet. So in this cross-section, let's say it's a two-jet cross-section at the LHC, if this tau n cut is non-zero, it means you have actually a third jet. And so you split your cross-section into these two pieces, and you choose a low value of this tau cut, of this n-jettiness. And then what you do is the following. For the second piece with non-zero n-jettiness, you can use an NLO computation, because it has one additional jet. And so it's actually only NLO. This, you only have to compute this part to NLO, even though the total cross-section is NNLO. The remaining part, which contains this region of small n-jettiness, is really genuinely two-jet. So this contains all the two-loop diagrams, and you really have to compute it at this level. But here you can now expand in this tau n cut. So you expand in this for small values. If you do this, then you exactly have this soft collinear effective theory situation. And you can actually compute this part in soft collinear effective theory. And so this is something which Raja and Frank have done. And there are many results now in this framework for an entire variety of next to leading order cross-section at the LHC. This is quite impressive, because this method is fairly young, but it has a long list of applications yet. With other methods, people have been working more than 5 years, or maybe almost 10 years, on a given method to get such a computation. The reason that this was so much faster in this method is that you can recycle a large part. So you have these NLO codes, and the most complicated part of the computation you give to the NLO code, and the code of choice is, of course, MCFM. So you let this code do that part, and the other part you have factorized into universal pieces, which you compute once and for all, and which you then reuse in this. So that is very nice. The delicate thing about this method is even though it's called subtraction, it's actually a slicing method. People don't call it slicing because slicing is like a swear word a little bit in this NLO computer. So people did the same at NLO but went away from it because of numerical issues. So the delicate thing is there is this parameter tau and cut with which you split your events. This should be small in order that we can justify expanding in it and computing it in this effective theory. But it cannot be too small because otherwise John's MCFM code will become unstable. If you go very close to this single region, then these NLO corrections will blow up and become numerically unstable. And so here there was a nice example where power corrections can help. So two different groups, including again Raja and Frank in this, have computed the leading log power corrections for the simplest case for a vector boson production. If you have these power corrections, you do this expansion now one order higher in this tau cut. So you can actually go to higher values of this, and you get more stability when varying this. I think this was useful also because it showed that these power corrections were enhanced at large rapidity, and one understands now how to avoid this enhancement. So this is a great application. On the other hand, if you want to go to all of these processes, you will need to work harder because now these additional hard pieces will be different and you have to compute them for all of these. So I don't know, maybe they're already all computed. Okay. But it's a nice example of these power corrections in practice. Another neat example of these power corrections is less phenomenological, more theoretical. So Sasha Penin, not using SCET at all, but his brain, has computed the Sudakov form factor at subleading power. So rather than just the leading term, which is e to the minus x, the Sudakov factor, which we discussed at length. He also has computed the first power correction, which goes like electron mass squared over q squared. This is multiplied by some function f1, which is complicated, so one cannot give it analytically. But what is neat is that if you go to large x, because the leading power terms are Sudakov suppressed with this exponential, actually the power corrections start to dominate. So if you go to excessively large momentum transfer, you would actually find that the Sudakov result is no longer valid and that the power corrections become dominant over the leading power. I think in the language of effective theory, what happens is you have some anomalous dimension, which is usually small, but then you do so much running that the anomalous dimension becomes larger than the regular dimension of the operator, and then operators start switching dimensions, and then you get these effects that power corrections can become larger than the leading power. As I said, it's academic, but it's nevertheless nice, and it's the first example where somebody actually has resummed power corrections, so that is nice.
Something can be said about the universality of some of these things?
One thing that can be said about universality, and which I haven't included here, is that actually Sasha Penin has done the same exercise for Baba scattering, and together with Serf, he has computed also Baba corrections to Baba scattering, suppressed by a power of m squared. Again, this is not the full computation, but it's the leading log similar to this n-jettiness. So if you computed this leading log, and this is something which is phenomenologically relevant to be included in precision Baba scattering. Good, so that was the useful for at the intensity frontier part. Now I come to the part which is maybe useful. And this is about Glauber gluons. So this is Roy Glauber, and he has absolutely nothing to do with gluons. So Matt Schwartz is at Harvard, where he is too. And so at one point, Glauber came to him and said, what the hell are these Glauber gluons? Because he's working on the QED type of things. Actually, there are certain photons with in kinematical configurations very similar to what is here. I think I tried even to track down who introduced the term. I think it was Brodsky and friends who first used this term Glauber gluons because these momentum configurations are similar. But it wasn't Glauber who called them. Good, again, so this is the following situation where you have a large energy coming in, but a small angle in the scattering. And then you get logs of this form here. this is a little bit different than the standard sket. In the standard sket, we had large energies and small invariant masses, but we had actually have to have large angles between all the different jets, if you want. So this is a different situation. But it's still interesting in the context of LHC physics, because if you scatter protons, or let's say mesons here, what happens is you have the hard scattering process. Let's say you produce a vector boson here. But then there's the remnant of the proton which continues. And this remnant continues in the forward direction. And since you have these remnants, any process has a certain amount of forward scattering. And if you want to show that the process factors into PDFs, then potentially these Glauber exchanges can violate this factorization. And so it's interesting to analyze this and to see in what cases this is absent. In the famous proof of Colin Soper of Sturman, a very important part was to show that when you do inclusive Trelian, that these types of contributions cancel in the cross-section. I maybe don't want to go into too much detail. They're similar to Coulomb gluons, and you introduce a potential similar in the way that you have a potential in NR QCD or NR QED. There are also, again, issues how these are defined. You need some additional regulator to isolate these momentum regions, and depending how you introduce this, the contributions split differently among the different regions.
So how do you know what to introduce the regulator?
Well, if you don't do it, you see that things are just not well defined. So what happens is if you have these types of integrals, there's sort of a plus Lycom component, a minus Lycom component, and a perp one. And DIMREG sits on the perp one, so it regularizes the perp one. And there are cases where you can get away with this, and when you integrate over the perp one, this regularization gets transmitted onto the plus and minuses. But there are other cases where it's not the case. So in the small mass expansion, you find situations where this is not the case in PT resummation. How to know in general when this is good enough or not, I don't know. In principle, you should say, well, since I have these different integrations, I should regularize them separately as a start. And then in the cases where I don't need these extra regulators, I switch them off. And the technical difficulty is, how do you regularize these other Lycom components in a gauge invariant way? Good. Anyhow, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but Rothstein and Stewart now came up with a Lagrangian which contains this global potential. And the paper is only 200 pages, so it's highly recommended that you go through it. This Lagrangian looks kind of complicated because you have these collinear particles and these soft particles, and then there are these potentials in between these collinear and soft particles. And then there are a variety of operators with always this 1 over kt squared potential in between. And you see that this is kind of a mess, these operators. There are some applications of this, but not yet too many. Good. So now I come to a topic where I think it's not important at the intensity frontier, but if it is, please let me know, because that's what I'm currently working on. This is a very basic problem. It's a problem, if you want, it's even the most basic problem where you can do resummation. Consider a situation where you have a collision, let's say E plus, E minus, to hadrons, jets. And then you split your observable into two regions. One region where you say, well, I have high energy, I don't constrain the energy at all. And another region where you say, well, I put a cut, I don't want more energy than a certain amount outside. So this is quite generic. For example, it happens whenever you have jet processes. If you have jet processes, then there's no punishment for radiating inside these jets, so the radiation is unconstrained. While there is some kind of a veto on additional jet, at least if you have an exclusive jet cross-section, then you don't want too much hard radiation outside, because otherwise it would not be part of the observable. And so there are many examples of such observables, everything with the word jet in it, everything which has isolation cones or any other type of hard phase base cuts is in this category. And these observables are called non-global, Non-global meaning that there are certain regions of phase space where they're insensitive to radiation. If you have the situation, then it's pretty clear what will happen. So you have outside a small energy, inside a large energy, and then you get logs. So you get alpha s to the n, and then a log of this ratio of outside to inside energy. So you get these logs of beta here, which you would like to resum if this veto on the outside radiation is quite strict. Now, originally, people thought that this would be like the QED case. So you would have the two jets. You would start with the Born level. And then you would compute the exchange where you emit from one jet going into the other. And you would just exponentiate this. And this is actually true in QED. And that's why I think it's not relevant what I discuss here, let's say, for QED computations. But it's not true in QCD. So in QCD, what you can do is you can first emit the gluon, say, inside the jet with no restriction, and then you can emit back out. And this second gluon now will see a restriction. And so Das Gupta and Salam looked at these types of diagrams, and they found that these contain logarithms which are not captured by this simple exponentiation of the one loop. So there are extra logs. And these logs have a very complicated structure. Banfi, Marchesini, and Smai showed how one can get the leading logs. And even the leading logs here come from this very complicated integral equation. So it's quite a difference to the Sudakov form factor case, where you just exponentiated the one loop. Here you have some incredibly complicated integral equation that you can't solve analytically. So it's interesting how this happens. And so that's what we try to understand. Let me continue a bit. It's interesting that the physics is actually not much more complicated in QED. The physics is still these soft emissions from these energetic partons inside the jet. And as I mentioned earlier, well, you get this iconal type of amplitudes, and these can be represented by such a Wilson line. And if you have then an amplitude with m hard partons inside, then you will not just simply have one Wilson line, but you have one Wilson line, let's say, here for the gluon and another Wilson line for the quark. So you have two such Wilson lines. If you have three partons inside, you will have three such Wilson lines, etc. And so the entire physics will factorize into these Wilson lines along all the energetic particles times the matrix elements for these hard partons. Now, often, or sometimes, you can combine such Wilson lines. If the two Wilson lines are in the same direction, then actually you can add up the exponential into a single exponential. So if they go in the same direction, you end up with a single Wilson line. But if you look at such a momentum region where you have a wide angular region, the different partons just stretch over a wide region, and there's no reason that you can combine them. So we really need separate Wilson lines. And the difference between these global observables and the non-global ones is exactly the fact that you cannot combine all these soft emissions into one Wilson lines, but you end up with this complicated structure. So we can translate this into a factorization theorem. It has this form here that you have hard functions, which are again given by the amplitudes, but the amplitudes for having m partons inside a jet. And then you have soft Wilson lines along each of the m partons inside these jets. And you have to sum over all of this. And so you get a sum up to an infinite amount of such partons inside. So that means it's much more complicated. Rather than a single operator, we have to deal with infinitely many operators. But what we have achieved is this separation of scales. One part only depends on the large scale q, the other only on the soft scale q times beta.
And so we, n was just a number of jets?
No, I'm simply discussing two regions here, an inside and an outside region. So I have only two regions. So it's the picture up here. But I can have m partons inside these regions.
My question, I guess, is there some cases where you only need to consider the first term, second term, something
like no,
something
even if I have only two jet production, then I will start here at m equals 2. That's why I have two jet production. But then I can have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 partons inside these jets. And I will have to sum up.
So there's no approximation allowed me to truncate the series.
No, and you will see that each term here produces a log, so you can actually not just throw away the higher terms. This is kind of the reason why you end up with this complicated integral equation. It's because you cannot simply truncate this. You can do this resummation simply by solving evolution equations. So in principle, it's a standard Archi evolution. You start at the hard scale q, and you evolve down to the scale q times beta. But the difficulty is now that you have an infinite dimensional matrix here. And so that's why all this complexity is coming about. But if you do this, then you solve all these logs here. What is kind of nice is that when we set up this equation at the one loop order, that the equation that comes out for the evolution of these hard functions is exactly the equation that you get in a parton shower. So doing this, at the end of the day, you're back at the parton shower. So this equation says here you start with m partons at the time t1. Then you can either continue evolving with these m partons, or you can do an additional emission at an intermediate time and then continue evolving. And so that's a standard equation, and it really comes here out of this renormalization group equation. And it's interesting that this Archi equation we have is not only leading color, but it's for an arbitrary number of colors, in contrast to the usual parton shower. So we have a parton shower equation for arbitrary nc, and it's based on an Archi evolution equation, so we can also add corrections here if you want. So this is for the one loop evolution, but we could also do two loop evolution.
So if you had then parton shower color information, would you be able to produce the non-global logs on that?
Well, even if you start at large NC, you get these non-global logs. So this BMS equation is purely large NC, and you get these non-global logs from a dipole shower when you run it, yes. But doing this, you might be able to extend this to sub-leading color. To do this in practice is non-trivial because you'll have matrices. So rather than a shower which just evolves from one number to the next, you'll have to deal with these matrices. You have interferences. But there are ideas from Simon Platzer, for example, how one could implement such a thing. So it's an interesting structure. This is one thing we would like to know, how to extend this to subleading color. It's also interesting to think about subleading logs. So we know how the structure of this anomalous dimension matrix, and we also have computed some of these entries. Work along this in this direction has also been done by Simon Caron-Hoare. And then finally, there's another thing called superleading logs at hadron colliders, which one can also understand from this type of evolution equation. I'll show you a plot just to show that we do some work. So for example, I can solve this equation iteratively, either at large NC or at finite NC, and I can solve this to 2, 3, 4 loops by iterating, and I can compare how the finite NC compares to the large NC. So let me summarize since I'm running out of time. So I've shown you that there is interesting theoretical progress in this soft collinear effective theory. Some of it, for sure, is relevant at the intensity frontier. Other things may be less, but are still interesting. There are many phenomenological applications of the framework now at the LHC, and there are also first few at the precision frontier, for example, this nice application to electron-proton scattering. Thank you. Another application which I should mention, but it's not in the framework of SCET, is, of course, again, this mu to e conversion. It's a process where you have an energetic electron, and it's exactly in this category of processes. Again, which method you analyze this is not so important, but it's interesting to analyze it. Yes?
So just a quick question about your Robert Lewin statements that you made. So you say that you don't think they're important for intensity frontier. I'm wondering,
I'm saying I don't know that.
Okay, so it's simply the statement that you don't know an application at this point in time, not that because of the kinematics or the things that you measure, you don't expect them.
I mean, with the non-global, I'm saying it. The non-global is irrelevant in QED. It doesn't exist. And of course, QCD is important at the intensity frontier, but it's usually non-perturbative QCD in the first place. So then this is not directly relevant. Now, with the Glauber it's less clear. Of course, if factorization into PDF somehow doesn't hold, it will affect certain parts of low energy things as well. But I don't see a direct, or I couldn't think of a direct application where you would say, we should include the Glaubers and then compute so and so.
Yes. So the fact that Glaubers are off shell, and you're comfortable with that in terms of effective field theory where you have head modes that are not on shell?
As comfortable as with Coulomb gluons, yes. But you don't include them as explicit fields, you include them as a potential. So in principle, this is not much different from non-relativistic QED. What is different is that there are these interesting regularization issues, and that these operators that come have a much more complicated structure. So you've seen this potential, and it looks kind of scary. This is the analog of the Coulomb potential, but with these Glaubers. Yes.
The discussion of Surikov suppression of the order that reminds me of discussion of Lobrovsky-Lepage of endpoint singularities in hard scattering processes, where you have soft endpoint singularities that are argued to be Surikov suppressed. Is there a connection there? I don't think that was ever made very precise.
So that is an interesting statement. So you say that people have tried to use this suppression to claim that maybe power corrections could factorize, even though they naively shouldn't.
So you know that the Amazon form factor has a nice factorization formula, and form factor has endpoint singularities. I believe these are argued to be Surikov suppressed in some fashion. Both because the factorization formula kicks in at asymptotic momentum that you don't really have access to, and maybe for other reasons, I don't know if that was ever made very precise, and I'm wondering if there's a formalism to make it precise.
Would be great if there is. I mean, for BD case, it's the same issue for example, for the B to pi form factor, where some people try to argue that you could maybe factorize this into wave functions. For example, Ian Stewart was trying such arguments, but I think this was never worked out to the end. As far as we know, it doesn't factorize, but there are certainly people who hope that it factorizes. I haven't looked at baryon form factors to say anything better. I can ask you a question, if that's allowed. Somehow I have the opposite disclaimer that Gil said. I'm talking primarily about things I have worked on. For me, it was the opposite. This is one figure which I haven't included from your paper, which shows next to leading log resummation and next to leading log resummation. And what I was wondering is, so the blue horizontal is leading log, and the red one is next to leading log. So why has the next to leading log such much larger error bars than the leading log resummation?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
So you give here three computations. You say that the full effective field theory analysis, the leading log resummation, and the next to leading log. And then so your best result seems to be the black line. But then the blue horizontal stripes, the blue, this part is leading log, and the red one is next to leading log. So is this separate? Why does the higher order have a larger error band than the...
I believe that's a typo that has hopefully been corrected.
So you say that the labeling is that the red one is actually the leading log, and the blue is next to leading log.
Yes.
Thank you. good. So. At least when I downloaded it on the weekend, it was maybe the archive version not correct.
I think the definition of leading log and so on was counting alpha log squares for one, and so these different are correct to order one, order alpha, to 1/2.
Yes, but that's why you say it is the right thing, that the error band gets smaller at higher.
Yes, there's nothing non-intuitive about the error
Okay. Yes.
I have a question which is slightly off topic from your talk, but about power collection. So extraction of alpha s from E plus E minus event shapes is very sensitive to power collections. Like, how much can one be confident that those things are under control? Because
yeah, there are two. There are two types of power corrections here. So I want to show you this lengthy Lagrangian again.
Yeah.
So what people are trying to do with this is they want to compute thrust, but not the usual resummation of thrust is valid in the limit where tau goes to zero. So it's leading power, and then you resum all the logs, and then you match. Here what they want to do is to compute to sub-leading power in tau, and then resum the logs of this is the long-term goal. But it's quite a complicated project. So here the hope is that if you would resum also the power corrections in tau, that you maybe get better results, or that at least certainly it's interesting to look at this because there is a discrepancy in alpha s. So that's one type of power corrections. The ones you are interested in is lambda qcd over tau, which also exists, or lambda qcd over tau times q. These are taken into account in a shape function like the shape function we discussed in the morning. And so this shape function is parameterized in a certain way, usually with a few parameters. And these parameters are then fit to the data. And what one finds is that these shifts due to this shape function are non-negligible. So it's a few percent in alpha s, and your precision is large. The claimed precision is larger. So these are important. And I'm slightly uncomfortable with the fact that these are so large. It's really a non-perturbative function, so it's hard to. So people put a model, and then they say, well, it doesn't matter whether we just fit the first parameter of the function or the first two, so we're not sensitive to higher moments. But it's not the theoretical statement in the sense that you can show that the other parameters are unimportant. You can maybe let me take that slightly back. If you're in the region where you extract alpha of s, the leading non-perturbative correction is basically a shift. So you have this function, and you get a shift. And the shift is one parameter in this function. And then the next parameter is a slight bending. So if you're far enough to the right, you can show that the higher moments are less and less important, and that the first few parameters are good enough. On the other hand, as you move farther away, you also move farther away from the region where the original expansion was justified. So then maybe you need these power corrections here. So there's certainly something to be understood there. It's also a bit puzzling that the power corrections which come from these fits always seem to be larger than the ones which come from parton showers. Now you could argue, well, the ones from parton showers are no good, but it's just maybe a bit puzzling that the two seem to be different in size. I mean, the things that people are doing, so one thing is to do power corrections. The other thing is do several observables in this event shape fits and see whether you get consistent results. And that only seems to be partially the case. But of course, only the papers that... I should switch off the microphone. Only the papers where you get a consistent value get published, while the ones where the value is not consistent get revisited and you want to improve before you...
See.
Well, I don't
know. Okay. Break for about half an hour.